We have these 18 to 35 year olds right now who are coming up in what really is a horrible political time for them. All that they have known in American politics since coming of age, let me give you the list here. Lewinsky and impeachment, 9/11, the Iraq War, Wall Street corruption and no prosecutions, the Tea Party, Donald Trump, Citizens United, government shutdowns. That's the impression of politics that this generation has. And Bernie Sanders came out, well, he's always been, a unique breed of politician. But finally, this generation gets to see that. They finally see him on the national stage. They get to know what he's about. And they say, yes, finally, we hear somebody addressing our concerns, talking about the issues that actually matter to us.
The millennials also never saw what the Republican Party was like pre-Reagan. Bigger and better than that, the Democrats, who they should be able to rely on. They've watched the Democratic Party go from a progressive party to what we now call the DLC, or the third rail Democrats. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the fire you can't put out. My name is Melvin. Hello and welcome to your weekly education with this fella right here. The headline, Clintonism screwed the Democrats, how Bill Hillary and the Democratic Leadership Council gutted progressivism. This is by Paul Rosenberg over at Salon. Hillary Clinton today promotes herself as a reformer with results. She says that she and Bernie Sanders really aren't that far apart on the issues. Quote, because whether you support Senator Sanders or you support me, there's much more that unites us than divides us. We all agree that wages are too low and inequality is too high, that Wall Street can never again be allowed to threaten Main Street, and we should expand Social Security, not cut or privatize it. We Democrats agree that college should be affordable to all and that student debt shouldn't hold anybody back. And this is been a hallmark of her campaign. Now, notice there at the end where she says that college should be affordable. Bernie's been pretty clear about this. He says it should be tuition free. She says it should be affordable. This has become known as Clinton doublespeak. Now, it sounds very much like she has your issues at heart. But what's probably going to happen is she'll probably find a different way to pay for college that still leaves it in private hands. Perhaps she will merely regulate how much interest they're able to charge you. Perhaps she will regulate how much they're able to loan you. But she's not likely to make it tuition free. When the dark side from the Clinton record from the 1990s is raised, whether it be NAFTA, the Defense of Marriage Act, welfare reform, mass incarceration, Wall Street deregulation, two defenses for her come readily to mind. Hillary didn't do it, or Bill was president. And times change, or you're forgetting what it was like. During the 1992 campaign, Bill Clinton became head of the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, or as Jesse Jackson called it, Democrats for the leisure class. To give us more of an understanding of how the DLC came to be, we'll look at Thomas Ferguson and Joel Rogers' book, Right Turn, The Decline of the Democrats and the Future of American Politics. It opens with a meeting of 20 top Democratic Party fundraisers 3 weeks after Walter Mondale's landslide loss in the 1984 election, where they discussed 1988 and how they could have more policy influence in that campaign and how they might use their fundraising skills to move the party towards business-oriented centrist viewpoints, as the Washington Post would report the next day. So we go from Jimmy Carter, who loses to Ronald Reagan in 1980, and the Democrats are reeling. It certainly didn't help that Jimmy Carter was primaried that year. So the Democrats run again in 1984. And remember, Ronald Reagan was an incredibly conservative politician, very much anti-worker, very much on the side of big business, against unions. Ronald Reagan today is a hero to the conservative movement for the way that he has and continues to decimate the middle class. what Ronald Reagan did really was a revolution. And when you look at the fact that we still practice a lot of Reagan's policies to this day, that even Democrats practice Reagan policies. Reagan Democrat, that's a real thing. And those folks still exist. So the fact that even Democrats still practice his policies today should tell you what an influential person he was and how things came to be the way they are right now. What should have happened was the Democrats should have said, let's go in a much more progressive direction. But instead, what they did was, let's look and see how the Republicans are winning. You know what? Maybe that's how we should win. Georgia Senator Sam Nunn put it this way. The moderate and conservative Democrats didn't make it past the first round in its primaries in 1984. We want to change that. A major Democratic proponent of increased military spending who backed John Glenn in the 1984 race. So let's go back a little bit to when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas and a man named Al Fromm enters his office. Al Fromm tells the story like this, quote, a little after 4 o'clock on the afternoon of April 6, 1989, I walk into the office of Governor Bill Clinton on the second floor of the Arkansas State Capitol in Little Rock. I've got a deal for you, I told Clinton. After a few minutes of political chit-chat, you agreed to become chairman of the DLC. We'll pay for your travel around the country, we'll work together on that agenda, and I think you'll be president one day, and we'll both be important. With that preposition, Clinton agreed to become chairman of the Democratic Leadership Council, and our partnership was born. Clinton was a natural fit for the DLC, Fromm said. Both Clintons, in fact. He was not afraid of challenging old orthodoxies. In the early 1980s, long before I knew him, he and Hillary pushed cutting-edge education reforms like pay-for-performance and public school choice against the opposition of the powerful Arkansas Education Association. As Paul Starr wrote in 2014, quote, in 1991, Clinton told a DLC conference in Cleveland, our new choice plainly rejects the old ideologies and false choices they impose. Our agenda isn't liberal or conservative. It is both, and it is different. This denial of labels was a way of getting people to listen. Eventually, though, needing a label, Fromm settled on progressive, an ironic choice. During the Cold War, progressive had meant left of liberal, as in Henry Wallace's Progressive Party. But it now came to refer vaguely to any viewpoint left of center. Fromm says he called the DLC's policy arm the Progressive Policy Institute because he was tired of his organization being described by journalists as conservative. So how fantastically did things work out for the newly formed DLC and the new head of the DLC? Well, immediately after Bill Clinton becomes president, he loses the House of Representatives for the first time. The Democrats lost it for the first time in 40 years. He has his first midterm and they lose the House. President Obama, although not directly connected with the DLC, ran essentially the same kind of campaign and espoused a similar desire to be neither liberal nor conservative, neither blue state nor red state, but both and something different. So Bill Clinton is president, and Bill Clinton isn't a full progressive. He's a Democrat, but he's not a full progressive. And then we start getting things like welfare reform and the 94 crime bill, which Hillary now finds herself apologizing for.
I supported the crime bill. My husband has apologized. He was the president who actually signed it.
But what about you, Senator?
I'm sorry for the consequences that were unintended.
She points out that Senator Sanders voted for the crime bill. It was an omnibus bill. And yeah, sometimes these bills come through Congress. And they've got things in them you like, they've got things in them that you don't like, but you don't want to lose the good things. And Senator Sanders made that clear. He says, I did not like the 94 crime bill, but there were things in that bill, and this is why we should have straight across bills. If you're going to have a health care bill, have a health care bill. Don't stuff things into it which are deregulations for, say, the pickle industry, because it doesn't make any damn sense. We should have straight across bills. You're voting on one thing at a time, because when you don't, that's how you get things like this. So Hillary's only being half true right there. And out of the 94 crime bill came the term that we now know in a derisive way as super predator.
Earlier this week at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, you called out President Clinton for defending Secretary Clinton's use of the term super predator back in the 90s when she supported the crime bill. Why did you call him out?
Because it was a racist term and everybody knew it was a racist term. Look, much of what Secretary Clinton said was right. He had a crime bill. I voted for it. It had the Violence Against Women Act in it. When mayor of Burlington, we worked very hard to try to eliminate domestic violence. This took us a good step forward. We're talking about the weapon that killed the children in Sandy Hook. This banned assault weapons, not insignificant. But where we are today is we have a broken criminal justice system. We have more people in jail than any other country on earth. And in my view, what we have got to do is rethink the system from the bottom on up. And that means for a start, and we don't talk about this, the media doesn't talk about it. You got 51% of African-American kids today who graduated high school who are unemployed or underemployed. You know what I think? Maybe we invest in jobs and education for those kids, not jails and incarceration.
So Senator Sanders has decided to stay in the race, and I fully support his decision to do so, because what we are essentially giving the country right now is a bit of a false choice. We're giving them Donald Trump, which is no choice whatsoever. And I did a show last week essentially labeling the front runner for the GOP as the essential death of the GOP, because it seemed to me that the party had moved a long way from what it once was. It seemed to me that there's no way they can be effective with him at the head of the ticket. And he had been called by former rivals as well as other lead party members all kinds of things, including a cancer on conservatism and a carnival barker. Well, the guy that called him a carnival barker would now like to work for him. And the guy that called him a cancer on conservatism now said that he's open to being his vice president. So that party is coming together in a fast way. And so they say, hey, you know what? It's time for the Democratic Party to come together. It's time for Senator Sanders to just drop the hell out of the race and just let us give this damn thing to Hillary Clinton. But we can't do that. And we're not going to do that. And there's a good reason why. And that is because we cannot give America a false choice. Because if you give America the choice between a Republican or somebody who acts like a Republican, they're going to pick the Republican every time.
He's doing exactly what I have predicted for months, which is that he will not stop. And one of the reasons, and I get in trouble for saying this all the time with a lot of friends of mine, but I'm not going to lie, you know, Bernie Sanders is real to his cause. And if Bernie Sanders was not real to his cause, whether he wins the nomination or not, and that's yet to be seen, but he's real to his progressive issues. And if he was to leave this race right now, Hillary Clinton, I would bet everything I own, will moderate to the center officially, in a sense. So Bernie Sanders keeps the progressive issues alive.
That's former Congressman Bob Ney, former Republican Congressman Bob Ney, pointing out what we all already know. Because now that Hillary Clinton sees herself as the front runner, initially she decided to stop spending money in the remaining states. Then she lost West Virginia, and things started not looking so good for her in states like California, which has an awful lot of delegates. Although at this point, it does look like she's got a real good chance of winning New Jersey. She has now gotten back into the race, but at the same time has already pivoted to the general and has began running ads against Donald Trump. But then here's the thing that the media is not talking about. Here's the thing that she's also very quietly doing.
You find a Democrat that's for cutting taxes, cutting spending $10? I'll give him a warm kiss.
She has decided to not take you up on that kiss, Mr. Jeb, but she would very much like money from your donors.
So here's my pledge to you. I will be a commander-in-chief that will have the back of the military. I won't trash talk. I won't be a divider-in-chief or an agitator-in-chief. I won't be out there blowharding, talking a big game without backing it up. I think the next president needs to be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
The headline by Jake Johnson over at Common Dreams Clinton campaigned to Republican donors. Hillary Clinton shares your values. The problem? It's true. From Common Dreams, quote, Clinton supporters have been targeting the donor base of Jeb Bush, whose main super PAC raised a striking $121 million, much of it before the race for the Republican nomination began to heat up. But the Clinton camp sees opportunity lying in the rubble of the former governor's failed campaign. Jeb Bush, along with his father and brother, have vowed to not back the presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump, assuming no third-party candidate emerges to soak up the fundraising dollars of former Bush backers. Clinton is now positioning herself as the deserving recipient. In doing so, her campaign is signaling to Republican donors that, as Ben White puts it, Hillary represents your values better than Trump. Bernie Sanders, who has questioned Clinton's commitment to progressive causes and has criticized her for caving under the temptations of corporate cash. Clinton has agreed with the notion that money is corrupting. In 2008, she attacked then-Senator Obama for his reliance on money from employees of oil companies. Clinton has managed to have it both ways. She says she supports campaign finance reform, but while the rules remain lax, she remains eager to take advantage of them, a la the Hillary Victory Fund. But she is not content to rely on her own corporate backers. She wants supporters of so-called moderate Republicans as well. In other words, it was Clinton's attempt to attract the support of the younger, more progressive wing of the Democratic base that represented a diversion from her natural position on the political spectrum. Now that she has a substantial lead over Sanders, she's returning home, politically speaking, and attempting to reap the rewards.
I don't know about you, but I like Bushes.
Nader once remarked, the only difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush is the velocity with which their knees hit the floor when corporations knock. And this was long before the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling, which completed the corporate takeover of both political parties. Now with political divisions on the surface to be peaking, both parties are remarkably similar on the most consequential issues, from aggression in the realm of foreign policy to neoliberalism in the realm of economics. Democrats, argues T.A. Frank in Vanity Fair, are becoming the party of the 1%. And remember, if you have a Republican running against a Democrat who acts like a Republican, the Republican will win every time. We are setting ourselves up right now to not just lose, but to lose to the worst person in the world. And I don't just mean as an opponent. I mean by far and away, the worst person in the whole world right now is Donald J. Trump.
You know what? As it relates to my brother, there's one thing I know for sure. He kept us safe.
And it's not just on this one particular issue of campaign cash where she seems to pivot to the hard right. There's also the environmental question. She was asked at a rally, and this went viral after it happened because she absolutely flipped out on the woman from Greenpeace who asked her the question. She says that she is so sick of the Sanders campaign. It's probably kind of hard to hear. She said, well, she stopped taking oil company money. No. And then she freaked out and she put her finger in this woman's face and she said, I'm so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about me. And then she has to go on TV and defend her kindergarten actions.
You were caught saying, I am so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about my record. What are they lying about?
Well, let me first say that, you know, I'm used to criticism. I've been taking it for a very long time, but I care passionately about climate change. When people make these kinds of claims, which now I think have been debunked, actually the Washington Post said three Pinocchios, the New York Times also analyzed it, and other independent analysts have said that they are misrepresenting my record. I'm just not going to, I feel sorry sometimes for the young people who, you know, believe this, do their own research, and I'm glad that we now can point to reliable, independent analysis to say, no, it's just not true.
So is she right there? Was the Sanders campaign lying about her? Hey, if it's true, that's not good for the Sanders campaign. Because when you think of all the people in the campaign that are still in the campaign right now, it's pretty easy to demonstrate times even as recently as 5 minutes ago, where Donald Trump was lying. It's pretty easy to play video of Hillary Clinton lying, but it's not real easy to find video or audio of Senator Sanders doing the same thing. He's been the one with the integrity, quite honestly, up to this point. He says what he means and means what he says, and has been saying the exact same thing, at least in public, for over 30 years now. So is it true?
Truth is that Secretary Clinton has relied heavily on funds from lobbyists working for the oil, gas, and coal industry. According to an analysis done by Greenpeace, Hillary Clinton's campaign and her super PAC have received more than $4.5 million from the fossil fuel industry. In fact, 57 oil, gas, and coal industry lobbyists have directly contributed to her campaign, with 43 of them contributing the maximum allowed for the primary. And these are not just workers in the fossil fuel industry. These are paid, registered lobbyists. Secretary Clinton, you owe our campaign an apology. We were telling the truth.
And that apology never, ever came. Now, Naomi Klein is one of my favorite authors, and she recently wrote one about climate change. And it has become the essential book to read on climate change. I have to admit, I have not got a chance to read it yet. I've only gotten to read reviews and go through the Cliff Notes and things of that nature and watch interviews with her, but it is on my to-do list. Melvin reads a lot of stuff. Give me a break. So she was asked recently, what do you think about Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate or the president?
I don't trust her on climate at all. And I don't trust her because as Secretary of State, when she had, you know, a huge megaphone to make this an issue, to show that she understands the connections between human security and climate, she didn't use the megaphone. I mean, if you compare her with John Kerry, you know, immediately, you know, one of his first speeches is about climate change and human security. He talks about climate change as a weapon of mass destruction. He connects it with the war in Syria. I think he understands it really, really well. Hillary Clinton never showed that as Secretary of State. More than that, she also, there were connections between her campaign staff and TransCanada and all these things that I think make her very vulnerable as a candidate.
The headline, Hillary Clinton goes on Wall Street fundraising spree. The Wall Street Journal reports that Clinton has raised $4.2 million from Wall Street, $344,000 in March alone. Quote, business interests are generally not sold on the notion that Trump will be a more business-friendly candidate. There's a lot about Donald Trump they don't know, said Ed Rogers, a Republican lobbyist. They know Hillary, and they know that she's not anti-business, or what he means to say is not anti-big business. Hillary Clinton tried to lean as left as possible without actually moving her feet, and now that it appears that she is in the general, she's gone right to Wall Street to get her money.
And I think that choice is to tell the billionaire class and the corporations. Well, that is one way to phrase it. See, I myself am constrained. I can't quite phrase it like that, but that's not bad. You get to the point very succinctly. I like it. But I will not repeat what the gentleman just said. But it's something with F off. I don't know what it was.
I understand how incredibly hard it is to raise this kind of money. Whether in public or in private, just about anybody in D.C. will tell you how awful it is that they have to spend all their time not legislating, not being legislators, not listening to their constituents, but raising money. And they're all sick of it. So yes, money in politics is a problem. But Senator Sanders has found a way by appealing directly to the people, not going to fundraisers to raise money, and now has millions of small donations and has enough money to beat the Clintons, has enough money to beat Donald Trump. It's impossible for you to complain about campaign finance while you yourself are having your palms greased with that same blood money that has been lubricating the gears of capitalism.
Does Secretary Clinton have the experience and the intelligence to be a president? Of course she does. But I do question, her judgment. I question a judgment which voted for the war in Iraq, the worst foreign policy blunder in the history of this country, voted for virtually every disastrous trade agreement, which cost us millions of decent-paying jobs, and I question her judgment about running super PACs, which are collecting tens of millions of dollars from special interests, including $15 million from Wall Street.
And Hillary has responded to the charge. She has very much tried to say, hey, I stood up to Wall Street. In the debates, she said, I stood up to Wall Street. I said, hey. This is an exact quote. She actually said, hey, I went down there and I told them to knock it off. To knock it off. What in the hell are you doing?
Secretary Clinton called them out. Oh, my goodness. They must have been really crushed by this. And was that before or after you received huge sums of money by giving speaking engagements behind them?
George Clooney held a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton at his house a little while back, with some folks donating as much as $344,000. I believe at the $344,000 level, and I imagine they got around some campaign finance laws in order to do it, but at that level, you got to feed her grapes from your hand with no gloves on. And sometimes the tips of your fingers might actually touched her lips. I don't understand what you get for $344,000. I make less than 50 grand a year. Okay. So let's just say I make 50 grand a year at $344,000. She gets that from one donor. That would take me 7 years of not just earning that money, but not spending any of it, just sitting on top of it. And she got it in one night from one donor, and then complained about this cash system, this campaign cash system. I can't effing believe this system. This is a terrible system. Can I have $344,000, please?
You look at how much is being raised, and I think the co-host for the Friday night dinner, $353,000, a couple to be a co-chair. Do you look at it yourself and think that's an obscene amount of money?
Yes, I think it's an obscene amount of money. I think that, you know, we had some protesters last night when we pulled up in San Francisco, and they're right to protest. They're absolutely right. It is an obscene amount of money. The Sanders campaign, when they talk about it, is absolutely right. It's ridiculous that we should have this kind of money in politics. I agree completely.
I don't pay a lot of attention to TV and movie stars because TV and movie just aren't generally my thing. But I have seen this gentleman, George Clooney, in a few things, and I don't know. I don't know anything about him personally, but this, when hearing this audio clip, made me like him a little bit more. And when I heard, oh, Hillary Clinton is having a fundraiser at George Clooney's house, I go, oh, great, yay, you know. Thanks for debunking that whole Hollywood liberal thing for us. Thanks for nothing. But then he goes on Meet the Press and he says this, and he says the Sanders campaign is right. This is ridiculous. And so Senator Sanders sat down for an interview, I believe it was that same day, and the reporter asked, is he backing the wrong horse?
Is he backing the wrong horse here?
Well, I think he is, but he is honest enough to say that there is something wrong when few people, in this case wealthy individuals, but in other instances for the secretary, it is Wall Street and powerful special interest who are able to contribute unbelievably large sums of money. That's not what democracy is about. That is a movement toward oligarchy, and that is why we've got to overturn Citizens United.
Bernie has showed us that we do not have to go to the oligarchs to get the money, because if you get money from those kinds of people are going to want something from you after you become president. And when you give something to that one person that gave you $344,000, you're not going to be able to give anything to the rest of us. Yes, you're the president of the entire nation, but you're only going to be able to pay attention to that small handful of people that gave you money. And if you really believe that Citizens United was a bad decision, if you really believe that we shouldn't have this kind of money flooding our campaigns and influencing our politicians, then your actions have to speak much louder than your words. And the way that Senator Sanders has decided to raise money is absolutely legendary and will be a very, very stark point in this campaign. When historians look back on this campaign, it will be pointed out that, yes, there was somebody who stayed in the race all the way up to the convention. And he did it with small donations. He did it with money from regular American people.
What an election season. For example, we've got the bright new face of the Democratic Party here tonight, Mr. Bernie Sanders. Bernie, you look like $1 million. Or to put it in terms you'll understand, you look like 37,000 donations of $27 each.
Understanding the corrupting influence of money in politics is not a new thing. It has always been essentially in politics, as pointed out by FDR more than a few times.
We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. And we know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob. Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
It has been a punchline more than a few times in this campaign about how, even though Hillary Clinton is winning, she is still just, she seems to be doing what Bernie Sanders is doing. She's trying to use Bernie Sanders' winning strategy. You know what would be better than just using his winning strategy to try to get you some more votes, to try to get you through some more primaries? What would be better is to actually adopt his platform. And even the Republicans saw this.
Now, I tell him, I say, you know, we want free stuff. I want free Ben and Jerry's. Bernie wants free college. Hillary wants whatever Bernie wants so she can win the next primary.
The headline from over at Common Dreams: Clinton ally tells The Hill, I don't know what's left to extract. The headline, Clinton camp says she's been forced to the left enough already. Wait a minute, Mrs. Clinton, this is where you're supposed to be. We're not supposed to have to force you. You're the Democratic Party's lead candidate right now. Why should we have to force you? You should want to win. You should want to win against Donald Trump. We shouldn't have to force you. Quote, as Max Ehrenfreud writes at Washington Post's Wonk blog, in the course of fending off Sanders' challenge, Clinton appears to have conceded to him on a couple of major economic policy issues. The former U.S. Senator and Secretary of State has abandoned the centrist position she previously held on trade and Social Security and has taken stances closer to Sanders' views. It's not all that surprising, giving factors apart from Sanders. He points to data from the Pew Research showing Americans' attitudes on various issues, including race, poverty, regulation, and foreign policy, are becoming more progressive. But Amy Parnes writes at The Hill, Clinton supporters argue that the former Secretary of State has already been forced to the left by Sanders and can't risk moving further ahead of the general election. They believe they have to pivot to the middle. In other words, they believe that it is time for them to start losing the general election. Representative Emmanuel Cleaver told the Politico website that, this is The Hill, that her campaign couldn't make any more leftward concessions, saying, quote, I don't know what's left to extract. Cleaver added that Sanders has already impacted this election probably more than anyone else, including Donald Trump, and then suggested that it was time for Sanders to help gather support for his rival. Parnes also cites an anonymous Clinton ally who said, we can't do it, regarding some meeting some of Sanders' policy demands. As Sanders sees it, the Democratic Party as a whole is in crisis, saying, it has not been clear about which side they are on with the major issues facing this country.
Democratic Party up to now has not been clear about which side they are on the major issues facing this country. And here is the truth. You can't be for Wall Street and for the working people of this country. You cannot be for the drug companies and for the needs of senior citizens and veterans. You cannot be on the side of those workers who have lost their jobs because of disastrous trade agreements and support those corporations who have thrown millions of our workers out on the street. And the Democratic Party has to reach a fundamental conclusion. Are we on the side of working people or big money interests?
One of the issues where she has not been all that clear on is raising the cap on Social Security. Now, right now, Social Security is going to be in the black. It has more than enough money for the next, I believe, 27 years. But after a certain point, you don't pay Social Security anymore. I believe it's $106,000. And so the talk is that we should raise the cap on that. Lift the cap on that, make even high-income earners pay past the $106,000 point, and it will essentially keep it solvent forever. Now, I believe the number that Bernie uses, which probably comes from the Congressional Budget Office, is 55 years, but that's still pretty good. Hell, I don't think I'm going to be here in 55 years, so that's still a pretty good amount of time, and I understand it's not just about me. But on the issue of lifting the cap, she gets a little wishy-washy.
Are you or are you not supporting legislation to lift the cap on taxable income and extend Social Security for 58 years and increase benefits? Yes or no?
I have said yes, we are going to pick the best way or combination. Or combination of ways.
There it is. Some of that classic Clinton doublespeak. I said we're going to find the best way. I said that we're going to look into this. I said we're going to think about maybe kind of somewhat. Okay. Look here, Hill. This is the reason he is staying in the race. When Senator Sanders announced that he was considering getting into the race, and he did so without a lot of zeal, he said if no progressives get into the race, he will join the race for president. But he pointed out, he said, like a lot of people, I don't wake up every morning wanting to be president of the United States. He goes, it's something that I've never thought about. He goes, but we can't have any more of these middle-of-the-road Democrats. We can't have any more of these blue dog Democrats. We can't have any more of these center-right Democrats because the American people are suffering not just because of the Republican Party, but also because of the Democratic Party.
Senator, do you think being in the race, you have forced Secretary Clinton to evolve her message?
I think if you look at issue after issue after issue, she has moved very much closer to us. But I think the real, what people really have got to look at is who has been there for decades, who has time after time taken on the special interest, whether it's Wall Street, the drug companies, the fossil fuel industries. And I think if people check the record, they'll find that Bernie Sanders was there a lot earlier than Hillary Clinton.
The calls for him to get out of the race are definitely premature. He has the support, the kind of support that the Democratic Party is going to need if they're going to win the November election. And you do not get to tell him to get the hell out of the race when he has these massive amounts of people behind him. And it's not just Democrats. He also has a lot of independents. And yes, you need to win the independents in the election. But that does not mean that you swing to the right or that you swing to the middle. His Democratic positions, his progressive positions are incredibly popular across the board. And so it appears this is not a dying campaign. It does not look like one. It does not sound like one. And that's not what we see.
As of today, we have now won 16 primaries and caucuses all over this country. And with your help, we're going to win here in West Virginia.
You remember the final scene from Marco Rubio's campaign? It's sort of a sad moment where they had to fill half of an atrium.
Yeah.
And it was mainly friends. And that's how most campaigns end, sort of with a whimper.
Yeah, this is
that campaign's not over.
No.
That campaign continues. And Hillary Clinton's people need to understand those people last night knew things weren't going great. And they were out there screaming and yelling and fighting. And they're going to keep screaming and they're going to keep yelling and they're going to keep fighting. And they're going to take it to the Democratic convention. And Hillary Clinton is going to have to give Bernie Sanders and his supporters something significant, because right now she's seen as an interventionist, correctly, not just by me, but by the New York Times. She's an interventionist. She has closer ties to Wall Street than any Republican that's in the race right now. And Bernie Sanders, for millions and millions of Democrats, is the fix to that problem.
And that is exactly what we're trying to do right now. We are trying to get him to the convention. We are trying to make it a contested convention, because this party needs to be contested. This party, this third rail DLC, Al Fromm, Bill Clinton, this party needs to move in a more progressive direction. And not just to get progressives, but to get the rest of America. Bernie's issues are America's issues. He is America's senator. He is where the majority of people are, not just Democrats, but Republicans and independents. And we are going to be represented at the convention. We are going to that contested convention. Yes, I understand the math is against us with respect to the delegates. I have heard the task of him overtaking her in delegates referred to as Herculean. And I will say that is a very apt description. But hey, there have been taller mountains, and we have ascended those as well.
Let me be very clear. It is virtually impossible for Secretary Clinton to reach the majority of convention delegates by June 14th. That is the last day that a primary will be held, with pledge delegates alone. She will need superdelegates to take her over the top at the convention in Philadelphia. In other words, the convention will be a contested contest.
Whether it's taking Wall Street money, whether it's taking oil company money, whether it's taking any of these conservative positions that are not where Americans are at, we need to be represented at that convention, because we are not just on the left of the political spectrum. We are America, and we are where America is. And America and the Democratic Party and their big money donors are going to hear from every one of us.
I think that Bernie Sanders could win in a general election. I actually think he is a significantly better candidate than Hillary Clinton. You know, it's one of those things where the logic of her candidacy was because she had so much money. A lot of it was just like, she's unbeatable. She's like, look at how deep the pockets are there, right? But the irony is it's where that money comes from, and the entanglement of the Clinton Foundation with so many corporations and so many governments, that is what makes her vulnerable. So on the one hand, it's what supposedly makes it inevitable, and on the other hand, it's what I think makes her a very weak candidate and makes Bernie Sanders a much better candidate.
That was Naomi Klein again. In all of the polls, Bernie does a hell of a lot better in the general election than does she. She is tied in battleground states right now. I'm signed up with all of the campaigns. I get fundraising emails from all the campaigns. Yes, I even gave money to Donald Trump so that I could get on his email list. And I got an email from the Clinton campaign the other day pointing out the polls that say that she is tied with Donald Trump in the battleground states. That's not good. She was doing it to fundraise. She says, remember, we need to beat Donald Trump. Send me some money. Well, you know what? Senator Sanders is already beating him in those states. He beats him in every state. We could sweep this election with Senator Sanders. But the Democrats, as usual, have managed, in true DLC form, to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And it's largely thanks not just to the DLC, but also the superdelegates.
So how much influence should you have on the platform?
Well, it depends. Obviously, if we have a majority of delegates, that will be the platform. If we do not have a majority of delegates, I would think that any smart presidential candidate will say, millions of people are supporting Bernie Sanders. They want an agenda that goes beyond establishment economics and establishment politics. And I'm smart. I'm going to listen to those people and, in fact, create a progressive agenda, not just to appease Bernie Sanders and his supporters, but to win this election.
The headline by John Nichols over at The Nation: a contested convention is exactly what the Democratic Party needs. I want to start with a quote from Joe Biden. Quote, I don't think any Democrats ever won by saying we can't think that big. We really ought to downsize because it's not realistic. This is what the vice president told the New York Times in April. Come on, man. It's the Democratic Party. I'm not part of a party that says, well, we can't do it, mocking Hillary Clinton's criticism of Bernie Sanders for proposing bold reforms. Biden dismissed the politics of lowered expectations. I like the idea of saying we can do much more because we can, he declared, leading the Times to observe that while Biden wasn't making an endorsement, he'll take Mr. Sanders' aspirational approach over Ms. Clinton's caution any day. Quote, unwittingly or not, Biden made an even better case than Sanders has for taking his insurgent campaign all the way to the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. He is better positioned than any recent insurgent challenger to engage in rules and platform debates. As veteran political analyst Rhodes Cook noted in a survey prepared for The Atlantic, by mid-April, Sanders had exceeded the overall vote totals and percentages of Howard Dean in 2004, Jesse Jackson in 1988, Gary Hart in 1984, and Ted Kennedy in 1980. Historically contested conventions not only choreographed coronations have led parties and their nominees to take more audacious positions and excite broader electoral coalitions. Recent conventions have been so tightly scripted that it's easy to forget that both parties have long histories of contested gatherings, sometimes with open combat over the party's standard bearer, but often with spirited competition over rules, platforms, and the very nature of the party itself. Contested conventions can open policy ideas and clear the way for significant political and social progress. That, according to Fitchburg State University professor Benjamin Railton, who has analyzed the history of conventions. There could be calls for reducing or eliminating the role of superdelegates, for example, for a better approach to scheduling debates. Remember, all these debates were intentionally put in places where nobody would watch them. And for consistent primary rules to avoid dramatic variations in turnout based on whether the primary is open or closed. Even though Sanders ran well in caucuses, his backers could gain credibility by also arguing the caucuses are too incoherently organized and difficult to participate in to be justified. On all these issues, Sanders supporters would have to establish alliances with Clinton backers who recognize that it's time to democratize the Democratic Party.
We're going to try to get a majority of pledged delegates, and that's going to be a hard fight, but we're going to try to do that in the next nine contests. But we're also going to appeal to superdelegates. What's not widely known is that well over 400 of the superdelegates who are supporting Clinton today came on board her campaign before I was even in the race, before the first vote was cast. And the point that I make to those superdelegates is, look, take a look at the polling, national polling and state-by-state polling. Bernie Sanders versus Trump, Hillary Clinton versus Trump. In virtually every instance, Bernie Sanders does better against Trump than does Hillary Clinton. And the reason for that is that we are reaching out and winning a lot of independent votes, not just Democrats. You're going to need independents to win the general election. I believe that I am the strongest candidate against Trump, and we're going to make that point.
There's a movement to try to get Bernie Sanders to run as an independent. No. See, the Democratic Party establishment is already there. I think we need to become a part of that establishment and help to change that party. But there's an awful lot of people encouraging him to run as an independent. That includes Donald Trump. Quote, Bernie Sanders has been treated terribly by the Democrats, both with delegates and otherwise, he tweeted. He should show them and run as an independent. Listen here, folks who think that Bernie Sanders should run as an independent, Trump agrees with you. And anytime Trump agrees with you, you need to question why the hell you believe that. Sanders and his campaign have indicated that the senator, who was still listed as an independent on his Senate website as early as this month, will continue to be a Democrat in future elections. And the calls for Bernie Sanders to drop out of the race have not gotten quieter.
He was being asked on the Sunday talk shows, are you going to support Hillary when you lose? I don't get that.
By the way, he's winning.
Let me add one more thing to that.
If you want to talk about it.
And by the way, head to head that I have seen, Bernie runs better against Trump, against Cruz, than Hillary Clinton does, not only nationally, but in states like North Carolina.
He runs better state by state, as Rick just said. He was winning by 50 and 60 points this past weekend. He's ahead in a national poll against
Hillary. So he's going to support
Hillary
when he loses?
Well, and that's the thing. The Democratic Party, and I know the Republican Party wishes that they rigged the process as well as the Democratic Party did right now, because they could rig it against Trump.
And the media is just so concerned about Hillary Clinton. Oh, you're tearing apart the party. No, you're not. Polls consistently show that the Republicans are very unhappy with the way their party has been run. They're happy with their nominee now, but their contest has divided their party. For Democrats, they're overwhelmingly happy with how theirs has gone, and they're glad for the discussion of ideas that's happening. But poor Hillary, oh, so Sanders is getting screwed with the way, with the coverage, with the delegates, with the way that the Democratic Party is treating him. But, oh, it's poor Hillary we've got to be concerned about.
Hillary Clinton's, the opposition to her, the negatives against her have been built up by Donald Trump just hammering away at her. And up until now, at least, he has not been going after you as much.
Hey,
she's
Andrea,
fighting two
Andrea.
Big candidates, and you're fighting
oh,
one.
Really? Oh, really? Andrea, in every state that we have won, in 19 states, we have had to take on the entire Democratic establishment. We've had to take on senators and governors and mayors and members of Congress. That's what we have taken on. So please do not moan to me about Hillary Clinton's problems. I'm in this race to win.
Report, according to TheHill.com, Sanders earned less in a year than Clinton did in a single speech. Democratic presidential contender Bernie Sanders, quoting here, earned less in 2014 than Hillary Clinton did in just one of her 45 paid speeches that year, according to a new report. Sanders reportedly earned less than $200,000 on its tax returns for that year. The Weekly Standard checked with a CNN analysis from February, finding that Clinton gave multiple speeches in 2014 worth more than Sanders' entire income for that year. It said that she gave speeches to the National Automobile Dealers Association, Deutsche Bank, GE, and then, of course, famously, Goldman Sachs.
Secretary Clinton has given some speeches to Wall Street where she's paid over $200,000 a speech. Now, I think, this is what I think, if you're going to get paid $200,000 for a speech, must be a pretty damn good speech. And if it's such a good speech, you got to release the transcripts. Let everybody see it.
I think Democrats have to think about the fact that she gave that speech, those speeches to Wall Street bankers, and that Donald Trump is friends with folks on Wall Street. And you have to realize that those might come out during the general election, and they will have an effect on you if you do not release them.
Here we are, my eighth and final appearance at this unique event. And I am excited. If this material works well, I'm going to use it at Goldman Sachs next year.
According to the headline, release of Clinton's Wall Street speeches could end her candidacy. This is by Seth Abramson over at HuffPo. The reason you and I will never see the transcripts of Hillary Clinton's speeches to Wall Street fat cats, and the reason she's established a nonsensical condition for her release, that by that being an agreement by members of another party involved in a separate primary to do the same, is that if she were to ever release those transcripts, it could end her candidacy for president. Jon Stewart gave an interview this week, and it was widely shared on social media. And it's because he said some important things. He pointed out how liberal the media has been with Trump, letting him slide, letting him lie. But he also pointed out the problem that I've highlighted here on this show, that the people cannot tell the difference between the two parties.
The door is open to an like Donald Trump, because the Democrats haven't done enough to show to people that government that can be effective for people can be efficient for people. And if you can't do that, then you've lost the right to make that change, and someone's going to come in and demagogue you.
And it's not just Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is one part of the problem. Another part of the problem, the larger part of the problem, the Democratic Party as a whole, not just the DLC, but the Democratic Party that has gone along with this line, and Democrats who do not act like progressives. The headline, Google to ban payday loan advertisements. We've talked about payday loans on this show before. Payday loans make it very, very expensive to be poor, and it gets you into a never-ending debt cycle because you already don't have a lot of money, and now you're being charged for, say, a $400 loan, $130. And those are interest rates that wealthy people and middle-class people do not ever have to pay. And Google whose slogan is Don't Be Evil, they have said that they are no longer going to allow, here in about a month, those kinds of ads to be featured on the Google website. But then, if you look at Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who has helped fix the race for Hillary Clinton, quote, the headline from Think Progress, the official head of the Democratic Party joins the GOP effort to protect payday lenders. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is from Florida, and there is a model for payday lending called the Florida model, and she would like to take the Florida model national. Now, wait a minute. You're a Democrat. You're supposed to be a progressive. You're not supposed to be helping these people that screw poor people, and you wonder why people can't tell the difference between Democrats and Republicans, and that's exactly why, because you're doing things like that. But Melvin, can you honestly say that she has fixed this? Come on, aren't you just a Bernie supporter and a sore loser?
Unpledged delegates exist really to make sure that party leaders and elected officials don't have to be in a position where they are running against grassroots activists.
And the Democratic Party is now saying, just like the Republican Party has said for years, we don't care what you want. We don't care what you think. We will give you what we are, what we want to give you, and you will take it, and you will effing like it.
There should be a role for superdelegates, but not the kind of role that exists right now. Today, they have much too much power, and it makes it very difficult for an insurgent campaign of the people to take on the establishment the way it is constructed right now.
Anybody with any sense, set of eyes, set of ears, or just the ability to read, can see that this thing has been rigged from the beginning. And yes, I will concede, Senator Sanders has lost some states. But if you look at the way the Democratic Party rules are set up, and I understand that Senator Sanders agreed to play by these rules when he entered the race, but if you look at the way that they do this, it is stacked against grassroots activists. And we're the people. You don't get to get elected without us electing you.
Congratulations on West Virginia.
Thank you very much.
But at the same time, you come out of there, at least now, by our count, with a 17-17 delegate divide. So you win big, but you still don't catch up. You don't close that gap.
Well,
what's the path?
You know, Andrea, it is interesting, and you raise a good point. Hillary Clinton got, I think, 35-36% of the vote, popular vote, yesterday, and yet she gets 6 out of 7 of the superdelegates. And that's what we've been seeing all over this country. In many cases, we win landslide victories, 65, 70, 80% of the vote, and she gets the superdelegates.
It's scary, the election that we're about to go into in November. And although there is a chance that Hillary Clinton will have a blowout if she's the nominee, and it's very, very likely that she's going to become the nominee, there is also the possibility, with the way that she is running, that she could be embarrassed. And I mean embarrassed, because remember, Donald Trump has not put out any specific positions. And every time he puts out a specific position, it's immediately shredded by the media because it makes absolutely no sense. He has gotten to this point by using a lot of slogans, by using a lot of foul language, by being a bully, not with any policy prescriptions that have been tried before or that even sound like they're going to work. He's gotten this far, excuse me, by being a jerk. And that's it. And that kind of thing is red meat for the Republican Party. They love that kind of thing. He's just like me. He talked just like me. He says the things that I'm thinking. But that's not a president. That's not what it takes. And if Hillary Clinton, if we lose, the Democratic Party loses this election to Donald Trump, who has no positions, and her, who has center and right-leaning positions, we lose to him, that's an embarrassment. That would be the biggest embarrassment of my lifetime. I can't even imagine it. But that's where the Democratic Party has said they want to be. That's where they're currently headed. And that is why we, actual, honest progressives, that's why we are headed to the convention. We will be very alive that day. And we will be bringing a fire that the Democratic Party is not going to be able to put out. We believe these things, and we believe in them very strongly, and they're not selfish things to believe. We believe that everybody has to have a place to live, food to eat, shoes on their feet, clothes on their back, a job so that they can support themselves. We believe Americans should have those basic things. And some of those things we even believe, God forbid, that those things are a right. We're all in this together. And we're not going out there for selfish reasons. We're not going to become millionaires and billionaires by going to the floor and demanding that you give us what we came for. But what we will get is a voice. We will get to put our words into the party platform. We will tell the Democratic Party that they need us more than we need them, and that they are not going to win any more elections if they do not start listening to us. Yes, they're going to listen to their big money donors, and they're going to lose a few elections. Then eventually they're going to realize that they need us, and they're going to come to us, and they're going to ask us for money, and we're going to ask for this: food, clean water, clean air, housing, a good job so that we can support ourselves, good infrastructure, good schools. And if we don't get it, you don't get our vote. Tired of getting screwed. We're tired of money going to war. We're tired of money going to bailing out banks. It's time for you to listen to us. We're coming to that convention. The DLC and the DNC are going to hear from us. America is going to hear from us. We are the fire you can't put out. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tficpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tficpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app or the iTunes app. You can download us there too at the Google Play Store. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or at Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. That is the name of the show. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, hey, you can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. My name is Melvin. Hello. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a big thanks to you for listening and spending an hour with me each week. I really do enjoy this time with you. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.